This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hi! This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Oh boy, today is a day for women who do things, really do things, and do exciting things. So I am so happy to start off today with a wonderful author. And I tell you, I could not do what she has done. Her name is Alenka Rusick. I think I'm pronouncing it right, Rusick. And the name of her book is She Rides. Hi, Alenka.
Hello, Patsy. How are you this morning?
Okay. Well, it's so nice to have you join me today to talk about your book. And my goodness, what you accomplished is so amazing. I was like in awe of you.
Well, thank you. It's quite an honor to be on your program, and it was a big thing for me, and quite a rewarding ride altogether.
Well, today is the release date for this book, and you tell the story. Well, you really tell two stories, because you tell the story of this major accomplishment of taking a ride from Northern California down to Baja, Mexico, a journey of 2,500 miles, which is an extraordinary accomplishment, but also all the other things you've accomplished in your life and the things that you've overcome. So let's start. I will say the prologue that opens the prologue when you're 50 days into the adventure. That was a frightening prologue.
Well, you know, you kind of have to start with an event that it was just one of the, frightening events on a journey. And I was riding through very remote areas most of the time, and that crash was pretty scary, actually. So
well, it was a good way to start the book. I tell you, it was a perfect way to start the book, because after that you have to keep reading just to find out what's going to happen. Now here you were, 54 years old, and you decided, well, life you wanted a change in life. So explain what happened to you and how you made the decision to make this particular journey.
Well, you know, life isn't always how we plan it to be. And my 2,500 mile journey on the bike, on a mountain bike with all the gear, and it was not just the mileage that I did, it was also all the climbing, because I rode through the mountains, which, you know, all the vertical feet that I climbed was 158,000 vertical feet, which is like climbing Mount Everest 5.5 times from the sea level to the summit. It really serves as a metaphor for life, which is often messy, and we find ourselves on a difficult path that we don't expect to be on. And, you know, that seems to be often impossible to navigate. So in order to get away from all the things that were happening in my life, I decided to go on this bike ride, which was really born a long time ago, like 15 years before I actually decided to go on a ride. It was during one of the difficult times when I was going through divorce, and I wrote down a thought, just an idea, on the back side of a Rumi poetry book that I always carried with me. And I happened to be on a bike ride in Oregon. I always wanted to write a book, but I didn't really know where and how to start. So I started writing about that difficult period, about leading up to the divorce and after the divorce. And I was only able to write one paragraph. So I knew I needed something bigger, kind of like a glue to hold all the events of my life together. And that's why I decided to go on this kind of crazy bike ride.
Yes, that was one word that came into my mind. I thought, wow. It was so long and so challenging. And explain about the bike and why you call it the Beast and exactly how you started off, because you had to carry equipment and all of the logistics that went into the planning.
Well, I'm not a very good planner. When I get something into my head, I just kind of have to do it, and that's why my father always called me a stubborn mountain goat, because once I get an idea, I can't walk away from it. So I had a mountain bike, and then I started gathering the equipment, and it really, from the idea when I told my husband I'm going on this ride to when I actually went on this ride, it only was maybe 2 or 3 months. So I didn't have a huge amount of time to plan, but I also am one of those people that just hope that I'm going to figure things out as I go along. So I had to gather all the equipment, like camping gear, tent and cooking gear and sleeping gear and everything electronic-wise. That was a big challenge, just to how I was going to follow the trails that I have decided to ride on through the mountains, not just in California through the Sierra Nevada mountains, but especially down through Baja California, which is very rugged and very remote. So my bike at the end I only weigh 110 pounds, so my bike, which I call the Beast appropriately, weighed more than half of my body weight. So it took an effort to just pick it up and rolling it.
Well, I mean, you are so tiny, and to see you on this bike, and you sort of just pointed south and you head off. But I mean, you weren't afraid to be alone like that?
Well, you know, there were definitely moments that I questioned my own sanity. I know my family questioned my sanity. My brother advised me not to tell my mother that I am going on this trip, but I obviously had to. My dad had faith in me. He did say that it was crazy, and especially because I have just gone through cancer treatment. So I was a little bit worried about how my body was going to be able to handle the physical effort, because I didn't want to hurt myself further. Yeah, it was challenging, but being alone is something that I really craved, and I craved it for a long time. I used to climb mountains a lot, and I like being alone. I like challenging myself and figuring things out on my own.
So along the way, you slept under the stars?
Big part of it was just wherever I could find a place to tuck myself in with a tent, and hopefully I was hidden enough from everything and everybody. There were times that I did not sleep much at night. I was quite tired from riding 8 to 10 hours a day. In California, they were definitely in the mountains, you know, where bears were roaming around, and that was a little bit unsettling. Yeah, a lot of it was under the stars, and that gives you a lot of time to just be a part of the greater universe. And I mean, that might sound a little kind of out there, but you feel very connected with nature when you're out there camping.
Well, you mentioned you had just gone through treatment. So tell us a little bit about what happened to you and what, I mean, how did you find the strength after that kind of regime of taking this very difficult treatment? How did you come out so strong?
Well, one of the thoughts that I had, because, you know, and your readers can pick that up. I don't want to reveal too much. And I also don't want this book to be just all about kind of health issues that I've gone through, which were many. I needed the time and the way to heal. And this journey, I was hoping, was going to do that for me. I was pretty... you know, discouraged about everything that was going on, and I felt that my time was running out, because once you go through cancer treatment, you know, that just kind of hangs in the back of your mind all the time. And I also, you know, again, like I said, not to reveal too much, but everything happened in very short amount of time when I wrecked my knee skiing, and then the surgery didn't go too well afterwards. So I wasn't able to ski anymore, and coach skiing was something that I did for many years. And while I was still on crutches recovering from a very complicated knee surgery, I was diagnosed with breast cancer.
Well, you know, you're right, because this book is really so much more than just what you went through. It's what you were able to accomplish. I mean, most people, I'm telling you, if you give them a bike and you say, you know, go to the park, they'll go to the park and maybe bike around for an hour and be tired. You have some kind of an inner strength. Well, there's something in you, sort of adventurous, because we'll talk a little bit about, even as a child, you were an adventurous person. You actually wanted to go on the Orient Express. So, you know, you have a spirit, something in you that drives you beyond what most people can accomplish. So let's step back. I love that you mentioned about your father, because he was, you know, when you look back at your life, I love the part where you write about your father and about how he read to you. Tell us that story.
My dad always had books next to his next to his bedside, and many of those books were English authors. He loved to read to me, even though at that time as a child I did not understand English, but it kind of set in my mind. And mystery novels was something that he enjoyed for his pastime, even though he read a lot of pretty heavy books as well. But Agatha Christie was one of his favorite authors. And he read to me from the Orient Express and translated at the same time, obviously. And we lived fairly close to train tracks, so I could hear trains all the time. And I was one of those wild kids. I just thought, well, gosh, I'll just I think I was maybe 9 years old when I jumped on a train and thought I was going to go ride Orient Express, but I chickened out.
Well, explain where this was, because where you come from.
I grew up in a beautiful hamlet of Slovenia, which is a tiny little country, now independent. It used to be a part of former Yugoslavia. And where I grew up was in the Julian and Karavankan Alps, right on Austrian-Italian border. Lots of lakes, lots of rivers, and also very close to the Adriatic coast. It's only about, nowadays, it's only about a two-hour drive to get to the coast. And that's kind of what brought me to Lake Tahoe, California, because in many ways, it's a very similar environment. We live in the mountains now. I'm overlooking the Lake Tahoe right now from my office chair. But growing up in Yugoslavia was, and in Slovenia was magical, and I was very lucky. I had amazing parents. My dad was very adventurous. My mother was a very strong woman. As a matter of fact, it's my father's birthday tomorrow. He passed away just a few months ago. And he would have been very proud. He treated me, the same as he treated my brother. He always dragged us around the mountains, sometimes kicking and screaming. But the mountains were where we spent a lot of time, and I've learned so much about life through climbing the mountains and skiing. I was a little ski brat, and my brother, we were both ski racers. We were always outdoors. We did not spend too much time, indoors, even if it was raining, and it rained a lot there. It's very lush, beautiful country.
It is. What year did you come to America?
I came to America when I was 20 years old. I had a backpack and a pair of skis, and that was in 1985, the winter of 84, 85. I came to Lake Tahoe via New York City. New York City was exciting, but I was not a big city person. So I very quickly ended up in Lake Tahoe, and which is where I wanted to be just for a semester. I was at the university in Ljubljana, and one thing led to another, and I transferred my credits. I got on a ski team at University of Nevada, Reno, and finished my studies in psychology at University of Nevada, Reno.
Well, I think this book is, of course, very inspirational. Everybody, when you read this book, it's called She Rides, and Alenka does so much more than ride. She's really, the story is incredible and inspirational. And I still, as I'm reading parts of it, I'd get to some sections and I'd read, you're going uphill. You're going uphill. I wouldn't even want to go downhill, let alone going uphill. People, you had knee surgery. I mean, people after knee surgery, they get on those little bikes that they, have at rehab centers. And that's a challenge. And here you go for thousands of miles. There's some inner strength in you that is really, really amazing.
Well, it's all relative. And I don't want people to think, oh my God, I could never do that. We all have our own challenges, and we all feel stuck in life. And I think when people read my book, I really hope that they can just be inspired. And if that means just going outside and going for a walk in the park or going for a walk around the block, that takes effort. just to move on. And I think the bike ride just serves as that metaphor in life. We keep moving forward because life never goes backwards. And we just sometimes feel a little bit, you know, stuck, and we need that inspiration. And I really hope that my book will do that. It's so much more than a bike ride.
It is.
I hope that at my age I share a bit of wisdom, because I have gone through a lot, and I have felt very defeated by life, and I needed this adventure, but that was my adventure, and I hope everybody can go and follow their own dreams for whatever, wherever they are.
Well, it is. I think one of the things people will find when they finish your book, first of all, you do have deep insights into life, into problems that people encounter, you know, throughout their lives. But it also, I think, offers a lot of hope for people. And I mean, actually, I wanted to get a bike after this. Guys, I need a bike.
There you go. That's what I want people to do, is get outside and move. Because in movement is such freedom.
It is. It's very inspirational. And it's a great read. You write so nicely. You are able to capture the moment and, you know, bring it to life for people. So altogether, I think you have a great success here with this book. It's wonderful that today's the release date, and I hope people will get it. You have also, I want to tell people, you have a website, and you have a little bit of, you have a little video there.
Yeah, that's a really nice little, I did a lot of filming with a GoPro and iPhone, and I am very technically not inclined, and I had to sift through a lot of video that made no sense whatsoever, but it gives you a little bit of a flavor of what the ride and what the terrain was like, and it was beautiful and it was challenging, and
along the way you met so many interesting people, and I love how you write about them and the things that you learn from them and the things that you share about your experience in different locations where you stop and you actually meet people and get to make some friends along the way.
Oh, the people. That is really where the whole color came into the ride. And people that you meet on bike ride or climb or hike or any kind of adventure like that, that's really what makes it. That's what flavors everything. And I was met with so much kindness. And it really, through that, I was able to restore faith in life and people that I, you know, you kind of get overwhelmed with everything that's going on around us, and there's so much goodness out there, and I was invited into people's homes. People paid for my meal just by sitting there and talking with them. It's just amazing, and especially being a woman traveling alone, when you travel alone, it really opens up so many doors for you, because people just look at you differently.
Well, that's true. I mean, I did travel alone all when I was young. I traveled all through Europe by myself. I loved it. And you're right. And one of the things is the people you meet and the how you can share, have this lived experience with them that makes everything sort of starts falling into place when you meet a lot of wonderful people.
Yes, and so you've done a lot of adventures yourself, and I bet, you know, we do remember the churches and the castles and whatever we see when we travel, but to me, it's all about the people and
you're
how
right.
you connect.
You're right. And that's one of the things you capture in this book. It's really fine writing and wonderful book. It's called She Rides, Chasing Dreams Across California and Mexico. It's by Alenka Vresek. And I pronounce it right? Vresek?
We have a little, that little roof on the sea, so it's Alenka Vresek.
They don't have it, though, on the book, Vresek.
I know, for some reason, because I spell my name that way.
It is Vresek. I should have known that. I mean, I've been over there, so I, yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Alenka Vresek, but it's spelled Vresek, people. You can find it, just type in She Rides, and boy, it's a great book. And thank you so much, Alenka, for being on Joy on Paper today, and congratulations on the book.
Patty, thank you so much. What a joy to talk with you today, and I wish everybody a wonderful day, and happy birthday to She Rides.
Okay, absolutely. Well, if you write another book, you never know. We'll have you back here, okay?
I'm working on it, and thank you so much for the opportunity.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye now. Okay, let's play the Father's Day special that you prepared, Big Ed in the control room, and we'll have, then I think my guest is on, so let's just play the Father's Day for Nat Geo, because this is a wonderful promo that you've done.
Father's Day is a National Geographic Day here at Joy on Paper. Not a lot of dads wear ties anymore. A t-shirt that says, World's Greatest Dad is cool, but give your dad a gift that keeps on giving. A book from National Geographic is always perfect. There is a Nat Geo book for every subject under the sun. Wild animals? He'll love Carlton Ward's Path of the Panther that offers new hope for Florida's endangered panther. How about ancestors? Any Irish in your family? Then you must get Jack Kavanaugh's Always Ireland. It's heading into summer, the perfect time to go camping. Your dad will love 50 states, 5,000 ideas. Where to go, when to go, what to see, what to do is a book that showcases the best travel experiences in every state. From the obvious to the unexpected, it will keep dad turning the pages for hours. And then he'll want to grab that fishing pole and start traveling across America. National Geographic books are always treasured. Beautifully written and richly illustrated books from the world's greatest photographers. Give a gift of love. Give a gift that lasts. Go to National Geographic Books website and get inspired.
Okay, thank you so much, Big Ed. All right, now I have another guest today who is also a strong woman and has written a book about being strong. And this is a fascinating book, and particularly for people here in Florida. Hurricane season is coming up, and they will love this book. And the name of the book is called The Belonger. It's by Mary Kathleen Mahurin. We'll check that. Mary Kathleen, are you there?
I am here, and thank you for having me.
Okay. And how do you pronounce your last name?
I know. It's such a bone of contention. Nobody ever gets it right. It's Mahurin.
Mahurin.
Yes.
Okay.
So the two things about my name are just, a stone around my neck. One is that my parents named me Mary Kathleen, or you can call me Kathy, but you can't call me Mary. And then nobody knows how to pronounce Mahurin, but that's how it is. Mary Kathleen Mahurin.
Okay. What nationality is that?
Irish. Well, Mary Kathleen is Irish. Well, yeah, Mahurin is actually Scots-Irish.
Okay, well, it's a beautiful name, and particularly I love Mary Kathleen. I think that's a lovely name.
Thank you.
So, wow, where do we begin with this book? It's called The Belonger, and it is, I have never been on a cruise, and I have not been to those islands that you're writing about. So you have to set the scene for my listeners and tell us about this book and, it's a very, very dramatic location.
Yes. I'm speaking to you right now from Vermont, which is our home most of the time. But we have a little house on Grand Turk Island, which is pretty remote. I have to fly from Burlington, Vermont to New York to Providenciales and then take a puddle jumper to get there. It's not easy to get there. But once on island, you just get to know everybody very quickly, the culture and the people, and of course the weather is pristine down there. Do you want me to tell you how I came up with the story?
Yeah.
So we fell in love, as I said, with Grand Turk Island, my entire family. I have three sons, and they are expert scuba divers. My husband taught them all. And so we decided to try Grand Turk because it has the third largest coral reef in the world. Coming from our little town in Vermont, which is so small we don't even have a traffic light, we were really comfortable in the small town of Cockburn Town on Grand Turk. And a few years went by, we visited as often as we could, and then we finally decided to buy something. My oldest son's name is Bruce. The character of Byron is based on him. He was the one who just said, Mom, we have to figure out to buy something, anything, just to get in the market, because we knew there were going to be a lot of improvements. There was an action plan going on. So we bought this little wood house, and it almost immediately blew away in Hurricane Irma in 2017. That was the first Cat 5 that had ever directly hit the island. And I was going to go down there. You know, I think I'm a tough girl sometimes, and I was going to go down there and deal with insurance. And my children were horrified because there was no communication with the outside. There was no internet, phone. We didn't even know, like, what our house looked like at the time. And so my boys forbade me. They were all grown men. And the oldest and the youngest gathered survival equipment together, managed to make it to Providenciales and get to Grand Turk. To this day, I'm not really sure how they pulled that off, because there weren't supposed to be any flights. What we didn't know was there was another hurricane right behind Irma. And my boys were trapped in it, all of our friends. It was, again, a Cat 5. And for a few days, I didn't know if anybody had been killed. You can imagine the agony of that experience. But miraculously, no one was killed on Grand Turk Island. The shelters were strong enough and welcoming enough. Even the undocumented workers were safe. And of course, that was something to celebrate. There was no point mourning the loss of my house when my sons and my friends were alive. I'm sure you can picture that. But it was the stories told afterwards, all the great adventures that one has when you're trying to survive, that inspired the story.
Whew. Yeah, well, you know, so there you had my house, and it's gone. You have to start over?
Oh, yes. But if you, I don't know if you remember those years, 2017 and 18, all of the Caribbean needed building materials. And so any reconstruction took years. And we are rebuilt now, and we still love our little island.
And, well, it certainly gave you plenty to write about. And let's talk about how you came up with this idea. I mean, you've already written before, so being a novelist and coming up with a good idea. Tell about your main character, because she's on the island, and she has a business there. So tell us about your main character and how you created her, because
sure.
I thought she's fascinating, and her name is Holly. So tell us about Holly.
Well, the women on island are fascinating. This is something that struck me immediately, and the more I spend time there, the more it's true. For some reason, it draws formidable women who also just happen to be gorgeous, and they come from all over the world. It's a, on a day-to-day basis, it is bliss and peaceful, but the weather is something to contend with, and these women just hunker down, and they clean up, and they rebuild, and that fascinated me. And I also, I don't want to get criticized by my friends on island, but I also think it's true that the island draws idiosyncratic yet fascinating men. None of them are like your average Joe, but that's okay. My character, Lord Anthony Bascom, is kind of typical. I mean, he loves to say, "I was descended from pirates." He feels like that explains him to other people, and to some extent it does.
He's a great character, by the way, really great. I got a kick out of him.
Thank you.
So here she has a business, and how big is this island? Because I haven't been there, so.
Yeah, no, it's not big at all. I don't know the actual numbers of the perimeter, but we get around from one end of the island to the next in a golf cart. We don't feel like we need a truck or anything like that. So it is small, and that's why people get to know each other quite well.
Well, it is a very small community. So, but the big ships, cruise ships, dock there.
They do. They were really smart. I'm not sure who was in charge of that project, because that was done before we came. But what they did was create a sort of fake town. I shouldn't use the word fake. I don't know what else to say. A brand new town. It's a lovely little town they made, and it's north of the airport. And you can get to Cockburn Town. There are excursions that come and whatnot. But many people don't. Many stay right there. There's a huge Jimmy Buffett's place. Many just stay and go in the pool and drink at the bars and shop the gift shops. The ones that make it as far as Cockburn Town, though, really are in for a treat, because that's the historic part of town. That's where we are.
Well, it is very clever. I mean, I guess the big ships wanted a place for people to get on land and spend money.
Yeah, and it's smooth as silk. They now have, I believe, three giant, I don't know if they call them ports, the part where the cruise ship pulls right up. So we can have as many as three. But where I live, I rarely see tourists. Certainly I don't see Americans.
Wow. it sounds so intriguing. As I said, I haven't been there, but I would go there if I could go on a plane, because I'm not a cruise ship kind of person.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm a cruise ship person. I've never been on one and never wanted to. But the island itself sounds interesting.
Do you think the puddle jumper might only have 12 people on it? Would you be okay with a little flight like that?
Oh, yeah. We used to have a small plane when I lived in England. My husband was a pilot. And so we used to fly all over Europe in small planes.
Cool.
We love it.
So that's what you would do. You would fly from Florida. Oh, actually, there's a direct flight that's starting from Florida.
Whoa.
To Grand Turk.
Wow. Well, who knows? Maybe I'll come and visit you. What season of the year do you go down there?
My husband's so particular about his diving. He's retired now, so he loves golf and diving. We like to go in November. I love it in January and February. But that's not the best diving, because you do get storms that kind of stir up the sand. And then if you want to see all the whales migrating, you go March and April. That's pretty dramatic to see that.
So when you came out with the story, and the nice thing about it, I mean, here we have the calm before the storm, so we get to know your characters and the people of the island. But boy, when the storm hits, it gets pretty dramatic.
Yes, and some of those things are really true. I know somebody who was stuck on the floor, burrowed in with his mom, who tied his mother to the refrigerator so she wouldn't blow away. So a lot of these details are accurate.
Wow, it's exciting when we get to that part, and the entire story it's charming. When you were writing, I mean, when you're writing, what overall theme were you trying to create here?
You know, when we first started to travel to Grand Turk, there was, you have to go through customs, of course, it's a different country. And there was one aisle of entry that had a sign, belongers, right? And I didn't know what that really meant. And it threw my imagination just wild. Like, what does it mean to be a belonger? And I later found out that is a title in the British West Indies, across the British West Indies, for people with historic ties, who were born on island, who may have been there for generations. But by then, my mind had gone to the big question. What does it mean to belong? And isn't it what we all long for? So that's kind of the theme. It's like, who is the belonger? Is it her ex, who is the father of her son, Byron? Is it Byron? His dad's a belonger. But in the end, she finds her home on Grand Turk.
Yeah, that's what I love the title, because at first I didn't understand also what it meant, but it does come through that, boy, she belongs there, and at least certain months of the year you belong there now.
I do. I cry every time I leave.
So what is your literary background? Who did you like to read when you were young? Did you read books about pirates?
This is such a great question, and it's so complex. First off, I was a career math teacher, and many people are very surprised by that. If they hear I'm a teacher, they assume I was an English teacher, and that is not the case. Also, early reading was really pretty risque stuff. I'm Irish Catholic. My name is Mary Kathleen. And I went to a neighborhood, I was born in a neighborhood, where the church was built first. This is in South Jersey. So they built the church, and then the GIs built their homes around it. But there wasn't, you know, like a lot of extra money. So there weren't a lot of books at school. It was like the first year the school opened, the Catholic school. And I liked to read. So I would just get up to the top shelf. My mother would put her books, which could be very, you know, risky for a kid. I would grab one and I would read them. And the funny part to me, are you Catholic by any chance?
No.
Well, especially back then, when you walked into church Sunday morning, there was a little booklet that listed all the banned books.
Yes. My best friend was Marcia Sue Loretta. very Catholic. And
yeah.
I remember that banned book list.
And, you know, in today's banned the book climate, I mean, I really reflect on it a lot. But I came to realize how many of those banned books my mother had.
Like Valley of the Dolls.
Oh, yeah. You know, John Updike, Portnoy's Complaint. I don't even know how young I was when I read The Godfather. And, you know, we would circle all the juicy parts and share. My friends and I would sneak and take a look. So I didn't have it beyond maybe the Bobbsey twins and Nancy Drew. I'm not sure I read a lot of children's books.
Well, I think that some of this seep through in this writing, because you really are, you're a great writer.
Thank you. Thank you so much for saying that.
Yeah, I love how you know, you have this reveal, the way to sort of reveal the story as you go along, bring characters in. I love all of that. It's really great.
Well, I thank you. And I really do thank you for having me on. Today is my book release day. It's pub day. And I get to be with you.
Well, that's what I love. I love to be with people on pub day because it's a historical day. I'm a footnote in the great biography of your life. So I like to do that. And particularly, of course, the wonderful thing is, because it is my program, you'd see many times you'll be interviewed by people who they get the book because that what happens. But because it's my program, I only talk to people I want to talk to.
Oh, and you chose me. Thank you.
Yes, because, you know, the minute I grab onto a book, if I love it, I say, I want people to read it too and have that same fun and joy that I find. That's why I named this Joy on Paper, because it's not just the joy for the writer of writing it, but the joy that it gives the reader. And you obviously have found the joy of writing.
I can't believe you're saying this, because when people ask me about my life at this stage, because I am now writing full-time, I have a newspaper column, a blog, a whole bunch of stuff going on. And they say, well, how is it for you now, writing full-time? And I said, every day is about the joy of creation. And here you've got the same feeling.
Exactly. It is. It does. It just seeps through your whole life. And it's definitely in this book. And people, really, all of my listeners, you should get this book. For those of us, in particularly in Florida, we think about hurricanes. I do remember the 2017 and 2018 period, because we had storms here too. But the book is excellent. It's called The Belonger, and it is available starting today because it's a release date. And you have a website?
I do, MaryKathleenMahuron.com.
Well, Mary Kathleen, I think you're a terrific writer. And I'm thinking about math class, I do also, I'm like one of those few people in the world who actually does quadratic equations for fun.
Look at you go.
I cannot understand why people don't love quadratic equations. They are
so you mean for fun, you must mean the actual factoring. Actually factor it.
I love it. I love playing
around.
It's
a puzzle, right?
It's a puzzle. You know, it's better than Sudoku and anything else. Crossword puzzles that bore me now. But boy, give me a good quadratic equation to take apart.
I'm so happy to know you.
Well, maybe you never know. I'll land up over there and come and visit you, and we can.
It'd be easy. Just go downtown and say, "Where's Kathy at?" And they'll point to my house.
Okay. Well, you know that. Don't be surprised, because we could do quadratic equations together.
We could.
Not too many people will do any with me. So
I'm sure I could bring a whole file of them with me.
Oh, wow. I would. That would be joy for me. So, okay. It was wonderful talking to you. Have a wonderful day today. Mark your calendar.
Thank you.
Put me in the footnotes of your biography. And the name of the book is The Belonger. It is available today. Everybody get it and enjoy a great read. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. Oh, I love that. We're going to play, I wanted to play one more time, Bria Burton's Book Buzz, because we're going to have, Bria Burton is going to be a guest host here on June 27th, and then on June 29th, Devon Miller. But let's play her Book Buzz.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2023 series starter, Rogue Pursuit by B.L. Dean. The young adult novel is book one in the Shades of Starlight series and is available in print and ebook. Now, let's download the book buzz. In the midst of a smuggling run, 17-year-old Perrin Hightower gets recruited to assist Ty, a confed cop. Little does Ty know, the ex-partner he's tracking down for betrayal is also Perrin's ex-boyfriend, a double agent involved in her underground network. One of the best wormhole pilots, Perrin smuggles necessities to the outer colonies. A recent cryptic message from her ex reveals he's on the run with galactic-level dangerous information, and Perrin joins Ty under false pretenses. She needs to find out what her ex knows and get that info back to the network. They travel the wormholes from system to system, and Perrin has to keep up her game of cat and mouse with Ty to hide her true intentions. When they discover the Confed Intelligence Agency has been tracking their movements, Ty confesses secrets of his own. Each new revelation in the case leads Perrin into greater jeopardy and into a deeper conspiracy than she could have imagined. This space opera spy thriller launches readers into a page-turning, swashbuckling adventure with a touch of romance. Author B.L. Dean is a science...
Hey! All right, well... Bria Burton's going to be here, right here in the studio on the 27th, and that's going to be really exciting because she's lined up two great guests, and I'm so grateful for her to taking over for me while I make a trip and see my son. And also, Devon Miller is going to be here on Thursday, the 29th, and he also has lined up some really great guests, and it's really terrific of them to take over Joy on Paper, and they're going to have fun because they love to be behind the microphone, and they love to interview and talk to authors because they both have found the joy on paper. So, I again, thank them so much for organizing their lives around joy on paper. And everybody, just remember what I always tell you, that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken in an audible book. Or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or perhaps a series on the Hallmark Channel. And you never know, and you won't know unless you start writing. So please start writing, and maybe, like for Carol J. Perry, I'm hoping that one of her series, she's got two great series, Haunted Haven is set right here in Florida. Oh, I love that series. So you can check out her books online, and she's got terrific books, 13 books now in her Witch City Mysteries. So check them out. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And again, thank you to Larson & Larson for supporting Joy on Paper. And everybody have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye now.